Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Hunaktu Sahadiryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, Sri Krishna Sandarbha, Adhyayana 2, Adhikarna 1, Description of Swayam Bhagavan, Lord Krishna.
I just pressed the wrong button. I wanted to switch it off.
Yeah, it's always fun. Even if it is accepted that Krishna is not complete compared to Vishnu, all the avatars are still eternal. Since it will be shown that they are independent, and even, according to some, they are independent as the Purusha avatars. Since they are eternal, this contradicts the statements Yuvam Nara, Narayanau Rishi, you become Nara and Narayana, and Tvatyayetam Antime, come quickly to me. Let that be. Apart from what we say, nowhere is narrated that Mahavishnu descended as Nara and Narayana. Is this that he's making these points? These aren't okay. Even the two statements are contrary to each other. Come to me and become Nara Narayana to preserve Dharma. Okay. If they had become two amshas of Mahavishnu, seeing everything at all times like a jewel in his hand, Mahavishnu would be able to see them from far off. Thus the statement, I desire to see you two, would be meaningless. If Krishna himself, while still being Mahavishnu's expansion, were to show two forms of Nara and Narayana, Mahavishnu would still be able to see the two easily. That being the case, since he could not see the two, Krishna could not be his amsha. And this shows that Krishna is complete, since he has powers greater than Vishnu, who could not see him. Right? Because if you expand, you can see through any of your expansions. But if Mahavishnu can't see, that's because he's in expansion, and he's an amsha of Krishna. So you can't see that way, right? Unless it's revealed. When Arjuna saw the effulgence of Vishnu, his eyes were blinded and became fearful on seeing that form of Vishnu. This is not contrary to the sutra, because the Lord revealed powers to nourish his pastimes, and in some situations withdraws or withholds his powers, such as in this case, letting Vishnu to dominate. Sometimes when the Lord fights, it appears that he is defeated from material vision. In this story also, the Lord's horses, which came from Vaikuntha, lost their way because of material darkness. It is none other than Krishna making arrangements to nourish his pastimes. Krishna allows this because of his love for Arjuna. One also sees such behavior in the Lord in dealing with Shiva and Narada. There can be no argument regarding this or any of the Lord's pastimes, since he personally arranges those pastimes. One should see this meaning through the intentions and words of the Lord. We have many examples of this. Through the intentions of the Lord, for instance, though Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan, in the pastime of the Govardhan sacrifice, to astonish the cowherds and jest, he showed an attractive form sitting on the hill and offered respects to that form which was himself, along with the cowherds. Similarly, he stole the sons of the Brahmana. Through Mahavishnu, who is a form of himself, experienced astonishment on the path, and at Mahavishnu's abode showed the form of Vishnu, which is his own form, and offered respects to Vishnu along with Arjuna, in order to amaze Arjuna for fun. He spoke to himself and Arjuna in that Vishnu form. It is said, Tasmai namo vraja janahi saha chakre chakre tamat manai. Together with the people of Vraja, the Lord bowed down to this form of Govardhana hill, thus in effect offering obeisances to himself. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.24.36. Vavanda atmanam anantam achuto. Krishna offered respects to himself in the unlimited form of Mahavishnu. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.89.57. Thus in Harivamsa, Krishna says to Arjuna regarding the bright light nearby, Mattejas tat sanatanam. This is my eternal light. Everything arises from Krishna. The Lord's arrangements indicated by words are as follows. Mahavishnu is called Purushottamottama. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.89.54. This means he who is superior Uttama to the Antayami, who is superior superior Uttama to the Jiva, Purusha, and who is endowed with the Shakti of Mahakala, time, a power of Bhagavan. Mahavishnu says, Dvijat Maja Me Yuvayor Didrikshuna Mayopanita Bhuvi Dharma Guptaye Kala Vatirnav Avanir Barasuran Hatveha Bhuyas Tvarayeta Tvarayetam Antime. O Lord, who have appeared with your expansions to protect Dharma, I brought the Brahmana sons here because I wanted to see the two of you. As soon as you finish killing the demons who burden the earth, quickly make them come to me. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.89.58. The statement is, I brought the sons of the Brahmana to my abode because I desired to see you too. Another statement is, O you two who have appeared along with your amshas, kala avatirnau, to protect dharma, dharma guptaye. This is a compound with a middle word, along with, missing. Or, you have appeared in the material world, which is your amsha. Shruti says, pado sya vishva bhutani. All beings are the Lord's feet, Rig Veda 10.93. Repeatedly, bhuya, killing all the demons who are a burden on the earth, you should quickly make them come to me, Me'anti. Having them come here, liberate them. It is well known that those killed by Krishna are liberated. Those who are liberated enter the light of Mahavishnu. Harivamsa says, Brahma te jo mayam dviyam mahad yad drishatvan asi. The great spiritual light of Brahman, which you see is my eternal light. So that means the Brahman aspect here then is coming from Mahavishnu. Yeah, so in Mahatattva it will be that aspect. So then when the impersonalists and all that, they attain the Brahmajyoti, then they attain that aspect, that position. So they can still be in the transcendental, they're in the Brahma Jyoti, but they still not be in the Paravyoma. Does that make sense? So then Shiva's abode, which is in Brahman, is in that aspect of Brahman connected with Mahavishnu. It's still in between, because the Brahman is not different, but it just has that different situation. Is that? Yeah. Anti is an indeclinable expressing the dative case. Kriya arta upapadasya cha karmani stan nainaha. The dative case is used to express a missing infinitive. Panini 2.3.14. An example of this is Edho Pyo Vrajati. He goes to bring fuel. Tarayetam is a causative form in potential mood. Having killed them, make them quickly come. This is like the example, making a glance, send it off. There are two verbs and one object. There is one meaning which is clear and without difficulty. Taking another meaning, you have appeared as my expansions, leads to the difficulty of the word may, my, being separated from its object. Right, so he says if you expansions, then, you know, brought to me so that I could see you, then you have some problem, because then this may, or this me, becomes separated from the object, which is Mahavishnu. Purna kamav api yuvam nara narayanav rishi dharmam acharatam stitai rishabhav loka sangraham. Although all your desires are completely fulfilled, O best of exalted personalities, for the benefit of the people in general, you should continue to exemplify religious behavior as the sages Nara and Narayana. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:89-59. Not only in your present forms do you help the people, you also help them by showing different powers as Nara and Narayana. Mahavishnu praises them by saying they are perfect. Purna Kamau, as Bhagavan and his friend, you too, the best, Rishabhav, the avatari among the avatars, though you are fully satisfied, should perform Dharma in order to spread Dharma among the people by setting an example. In order to protect the people, stityai, in designating them as Nara Narayanao Rishi, he indicates that the two sages are like vibhutis because of being small umshas. The Lord says in the 11th canto, Narayano Muninam Muninam Cha, I am Narayana among the sages. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:16-25. So this Narayana means Narayana. I decide that you must come here to retrieve the Brahman's sons. Since you are the pinnacle of Dharma, Krishna speaks in Harivamsa. Mahavishnu stole the children in order to see me. He thought, Krishna will come because of the Brahman. Krishna would not come here otherwise. Harivamsa 2:114-8. Thus, you too, whose amshas are Nara Narayana, should act according to Dharma by retrieving the Brahman's sons. The statement should not be explained otherwise. This also shows that Krishna is superior to Mahavishnu. That Mahavishnu's greatness arises from Krishna is stated in the following. Having seen the domain of Vishnu, Arjuna was totally amazed. He concluded that whatever extraordinary powers a person exhibits can only be manifested, a manifestation of Krishna's mercy. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:89-62. The verse does not state that his power arises because of Mahavishnu. Sridhar Swami's explanation of the topic agrees with this. Commenting on 10:89-21, he says, another story is told to show that Krishna is Bhagavan, having the qualities previously described. Riti. Having proven that all the contrary statements of Bhagavatam can be harmonized by the statements Krishna is to Bhagavan Swayam, the author now addresses contrary statements from other scriptures where it's stated that the white and black hair of Vishnu become Balaram and Krishna, right? So you have the statements that's clear that it should be like this, you know, that Krishna is the supreme. Then you have statements that could be seen in another way. But now what he's showing is that even though it could be seen in another way by how you grammatically look at it, also by the grant, if you apply the Parivasha Sutra to remove the contrariness, it still doesn't go against the grammar. You may use other facets of the grammar to explain it. But it still comes out, you know, being harmonized. And it's not that you're just making that interpretation while the grammar says otherwise. So, yeah. Statements with a seemingly contrary meaning must be seen with a meaning which is agreeable to the Parivasha Sutra. Such is the case of a statement like Uja Haratmana Keshav Sita Krishna Mahamune. O great sage, Vishnu took a white and black hair from himself, and these became Balaram and Krishna. Vishnu Purana 5:159. Mahabharata says, Vishnu took two hairs, one white and one black. These two hairs entered the wombs of Rohini and Devaki in the Yadudainis family. The white hair became Balaram, and the black hair became Krishna. Mahabharata 1:189-31. The meaning is explained by Sridhar Swami as a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam 2:7-26. Krishna, with skillfully bound up hair, whose method of attainment is unknown to men, having made his appearance to relieve the earth of the suffering caused by the armies of demons, and to relieve the devotees of their pain of separation, will perform activities whose sweetness will hide his powers. He says, Sita Krishna Kesha, bound up black hair. Or maybe it's in, but it's just somehow another. It's a double thing on one. You apply two.
Sita Krishna Kesha in the Bhagavatam verse, Maharaj.
Yes, yes, but I'm just saying the order.
Maharaj? So is this is the same verse from the Mahabharata, just translated differently? Is that
No, this is Bhagavatam, I think.
Oh, I see.
Or it could be this is how he's explaining that same verse from the Mahabharata. It's translated differently because, see, is in translating you have so many synonyms and so many ways that these different words are applied depending upon which case you're using, because the case endings for many of them are common, you know? And so then, depending upon your view of it, you might see it as... you might see it as one position because that matches how you're looking at it. But if you're seeing it by Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, then you'll use those words that would match that. Does that make sense? So when we say, no, but this is, you know, the dictionary meaning, but the dictionary has so many words. Why, what did he mean it's a dictionary meaning? Right? We're not talking about a word, we're talking about a whole verse here. So the dictionary doesn't have a meaning for that verse. It only is dealing with individual words. You know, and some words have 10, 12 different meanings that seemingly are contradictory, but because of the underlying potencies that are involved, it's not. You know, it could mean the sun, it could mean the effulgence of the Brahmana. It could mean just the that mood that is there when someone's happy. You know, they seem to be light. While if they're not happy, they become dark. It doesn't matter what color they are. You have that kind of thing. So you may be talking about the same thing. It says, no, here it says it's sun. But, you know, but then, or someone else says, no, it means, you know, the person's happy. But they're talking about the sun, or they're talking about the Brahmana. You know what I'm saying? So they're not seeing the underlying point that's being made, and so that point then has to be brought in line with Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. So that's why you can get so many different translations. I think it's very interesting is that, like when you have the Max Müller stuff, that he's translating in the Dharma Shastra. And so things that are straightforward or things that are ritualistic, that are, you know, fairly straightforward, or you don't have a comparable element in the Western culture, generally they're translated pretty straightforward. But if it's something that would be different from and therefore seen as inferior to the Western culture by the Westerners, then the synonyms used are always the worst ones, the ones that will give the worst connotation. Like you say, ordinary. But also in ordinary, that same word can also mean, low grade, or, you know, so it can mean like that. So that, now if you're talking about something that, would make them look bad, they'll put ordinary. But if it would be something to make the Veda culture look bad, they will put low class. You know what I'm saying? So it's just that's the thing. Someone can say, "Oh, but how do you know what the truth is?" Therefore, the Paribhasha Sutra. Because otherwise, some say, "Oh, but he's saying this, and that one's saying that, and so the verse, they're both quoting the same verse." So, but you have to see it according to the Paribhasha Sutra. Then you can see what is about. They could be both right. They're just bringing out different. Or they both be wrong, or one's right and one's wrong. You know, so you have to see. It depends upon how much it's following the pursuance of bringing out the meaning of the Paribhasha Sutra. So it's not a matter of opinion. If it's not connected to the Paribhasha Sutra, yes, now we're dealing with an opinion. If you're dealing with the Paribhasha Sutra, it's not a matter of opinion. So,
yeah. We see that Mahaprabhu in the early stages, he was teaching grammar, and he was the best, saying logic. Then, after pilgrimage to Gaya, he never actually used it anymore. Because he gave it up as an inferior kind of practice. And of course he was so beautiful and charming that he went and everybody surrendered just on the spot, just by chanting and seeing him. Then we see the works of Rupa and Sanatana. Sometimes they use, but it's not that often. Although they're expert. And then we see Jiva Goswami. His explanation is grammar and logic, and saying Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Like if you read Bhagavatam commentaries, it's grammar, and unless we know Sanskrit grammar, it becomes really difficult to read those commentaries. Of course, we have.
But even Sanatana, like in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the commentaries are all with grammar. But when it's translated into English, that doesn't mean much for people in English. So they've been paraphrased. So the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the translation of the purports, those are paraphrasing. Now and again, if it will make sense in English, he uses the grammar as it is. You see here and there a couple of them.
Right.
But otherwise, there's a lot of them. But he just leaves it out because, you know, who knows grammar?
Yeah.
You know, so just like that.
Yeah. So I'm thinking on this level, if we, like, really want to go deep, because to me, you know, how the sentence is built, because... You know, English is not my first language, and I don't know any Sanskrit, no Bengali, no nothing. Like basically, you know, a few things I know, but it's not. It's
but you
not.
Shouldn't feel bad. English is my first language, but I don't know the grammar either. You know, if you come from Harvard, maybe you know the grammar. You know?
So this I mean, what it is actually, it would be really helpful. To get at least basic knowledge of Sanskrit, then it would make sense, because
it's more a basic knowledge of language. Because the basic knowledge of Sanskrit, it's unless you understand its language, its communication. So we do have a course for that. It's just that this is the first time it's ever come up that it might be useful.
Yeah,
like that. But we do have one, because the thing is that language is language. Now, expressing it through Sanskrit, it's the most perfect.
Yeah.
Because Sanskrit has all the elements to make it work very nicely, very refined way. The principles of the language are also there. You can find them in English. But it just sometimes it becomes confusing because the grammar is not as clear. But if you understand the principle you're working at, then it doesn't matter what people think is the English grammar. You understand what's going on. You know, because like you said, Russian will have a certain amount of the grammar, you know, strong in it. Other languages, generally most languages other than English, have a good, you know, solid grammatical. You know, Latin very good, Greek very good. Other languages, more or less. But English is kind of like you. It's a spoken language that the grammar has been, you know, imposed upon.
Yeah.
And, you know, and those who are very good at this can do a good job of it to some degree. But without actually understanding Sanskrit, no one will actually be able to explain the grammar fully. Because it becomes so relative. I can describe this term because it's connection to that term, and this term because it connects to that, that because it connects to this. So after going through four or five stages, I can kind of get a general feeling of what it means. Well, in Sanskrit, it'll directly say, this part means this, this part means this. Each one is clearly defined on its own and how it relates to the others. So if you understand language like that, then it will be, that would be worthwhile. So definitely it could be one of the things that we could do. You know, like that. Yes.
Also, a side point to note on that is like what is described here as the grammar, it's not the normal level, it's the deepest level. I mean to say that even just combining two statements, the Shiksha, there are like 15 to 20 standard books.
Mm.
One of my friend was into it, he was telling.
Mm-hmm.
Like you need to know so deeply in order to make a comment whether like know how this is works. It's the easiest way, then he said the easiest way is just accept like whatever is given there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that Kama Gayatri, we know the story. Like, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur didn't knew how it is a half a syllable instead of one.
Mm.
And these are the guys in like 300, 400 years before where they might have known everything.
Mm-hmm.
Of what a Siksha is, and he didn't know.
Yeah.
Then forget about right now how much
is lost. Yeah. That's why then what I'm saying, the approach is from
language
yeah. Not from Sanskrit. Because for us, because we're learning it through English and that, then the principles of how it's working, that will work very well for us. But all the detail on it means you understand the concepts, but the point is that those concepts are what's going to make you appreciate and understand what's being said. You know, so then you have the content, you know, what's dative and what's this and that and those kind of things. So these become very clear in Sanskrit. They're very nicely explained in Sanskrit. In English, some things are nicely explained, most aren't. The finer you get, you know, like if you say like a modal, then that's defined because of something else. That's defined, and it keeps going around, so no one understands it. What happens is by working with it, after a while, you get a feeling for it. So it's an art. It's not actually a science. That's the difficult. The Sanskrit is a science. But modern grammar, part of it's scientific, but a lot of it, when it gets there, it's just art. You know, it's like we're doing some editing on some English things. But it's if you knew the grammar, yes, you could get into things, but you have to see is what explains what you want to say. Because grammatically it may be correct, but then the problem is by the usage of that word in combination of others, it gives you a different effect than if you use it a different word. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it has to be that, because the point is it's communication. So language is, that's why you see is on the points of authority, grammar is the, you know, I mean etymology is the lowest, and above that I think is grammar.
Yeah.
So you have to see other aspects, you know, first. Those things are there, it supports it. You know, so it won't be against. So what they're saying will never be against the grammar or against like that. It may be against how someone likes to translate it. Like I've seen one of our translators before, I used to, whatever it was, it would just be, what was it? Can't remember what he had one word for the whole cachet of wonderful or something. And it worked, the wonderful would work. But the problem would come up is that you wouldn't get some of the subtleties of it. You know?
Yeah.
With that.
I mean, the difficulty we face is that when we translate the material,
mm-hmm.
which is already translated from the origin into mm-hmm. English, then we translate it into Russian. Then, if we give those examples connecting to the grammar in Russian, sometimes it doesn't make any sense.
Mm.
And because it's in the context, somehow, sometimes, I'm able to explain it.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, it makes it really, really difficult, because with Sanskrit, what happens, it's very exact language, mm-hmm. like you mentioned, but it's also very poetic language. Mm-hmm. It has those both sides. Because if we take other languages, it's either this or that.
Like English is very poetic, not very exact. German is very exact, not necessarily as poetic.
Yeah. So this course would help on language, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. as a general idea of how language works,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll be able to explain it better, even without, you know, those exact details that Sanskrit offers us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because here they're just talking about the particular case of that. If you understand how the case works and what it's doing, then you'll understand how he's using the word.
Yeah.
You may not know the sutra that explains that or the, you know, stuff like that. It won't be as necessary. Because here, in other words, we're approaching language from a descending aspect.
Yeah.
You know, the ascending, that's what that he was talking about. The devotee is, if you get into the details, it's just beyond what you can deal with. So, those people who know that, they're known as scholarly, because scholarly means the detail you know is way more than anybody else. But as we see in these different pastimes of the Lord, and given in the Puranic history, someone who has that level of, scholarly acumen, even though it's better than anybody else, it doesn't mean they actually know what's going on.
Yeah.
Because grammar is simply a structure. It's what you do with the structure,
yeah.
how you use the structure, that's the important thing. You know? Does that make sense? You know, just like, let's say, if it was up to, let's say, engineers making a building, and it was only an engineer, no one else, then the thing would be perfect engineeringly, but it might be completely uninhabitable. You know, like I remember this one, it was a big discussion that when they were doing the engineering for the new temple, Not the new temple, but it's the new temple then. For, in front of Radha Madhava.
Yeah.
You know, so from behind the Sringadev to outside the, temple doors is quite a big span. And so for some reason why they couldn't run it somewhere else, but whatever it is, because they work in a straight line is the best, you know, the shortest distance. Even though it may be the most inconvenient, but it's the best engineeringly. So then, because they were had gotten the idea that the pipe has to go under the temple floor, but now according to engineering, that distance, you know, something like 78 feet or something, is bigger than it should be. Therefore, in the middle of Radha Madhava's temple, we should have a manhole cover. I mean, we could cover it with marble and this and that, you know, and then be able to take it out. Of course, every time you step on it, it'll go clink, clink, and stuff like that. And, you know, and when the devotees jump up and down the track, and you know, all those things. But he was convinced we have to have a manhole cover. And they told him, you can't have a manhole cover. It's in the middle of the temple. So they worked out some other solution, whether he just put in a bigger pipe or whether they ran it around the building. But in his, that would be the perfection. So, that's the difficulty, is the grammarians and these scholars, they may know the facts so nicely, but they can't reconcile. And so whatever makes sense to them in their subjective mood, even though they will always claim they're objective, because it means I have more knowledge, therefore I'm objective. Like you have a certain amount of knowledge, you're subjective. I have more knowledge, so therefore I'm objective. But how he interprets that information, it has to be subjective. That's just how the energy works. There's no question of it not working like that. But then their pride, like we see like Balabhata, then their pride is that they know better than anybody else. And so it becomes a real problem. So that's why then the descending is you can understand what's going on, even though you don't. Because the dative means what it is you're trying to obtain. It's, in other words, the prayojana aspect. So he's saying what you're trying to obtain from it. Well, generally, it would just be dative means I did this, this happened. They're just taking it as a reaction. You do the action with the verb, you know, direct it at something, I get a result. Right? But now without thinking, dative is taken as objective. It's directed towards, but then the result. So it's directed like Krishna is performing a pastime directed at Radharani, but the result is something else. Because we always focus on, if I get this result, then that's prayojana. No. It's where it's directed and why. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, the subject is Krishna, the object is Radharani. And then in between, the verb, that's their pastimes.
Yeah.
He's the Vishai, she's the Ashra. That's where it happens. So that affection that they taste from that, that's the prayojana, not the dative. The dative may be very nice in support of that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like Krishna dresses up as a demigoddess and goes to Radharani's house. Then, being there at the house, then, you know, they all talk to her about the demigoddess, you know, and everything like that, and what you do, and all these things, and they get into singing things, and since she's from the heavenly planets, then she'll know, you know, it's another thing for city. Oh, well, whatever it is. There's the Grama, yeah. Sagrama is what we generally sing in. People before used to know Ma Grama from the fourth note. Sa is the first note, fourth note. But there's Ga Grama, which is from the third note. And so people nowadays don't even know what it is. They just said, because it's Ga means Gandharva, it's gone back to the Gandharvas. And then everyone leaves you alone. They don't say, well, you know, how are you guys such idiots that you lost it? You know. So then Radharani, and then they ask her to sing something in that Gagrama, you know, and then they're using some very far out raga and some very far out, you know, the tal, the beat, and that would, in other words, this would be the most difficult something to sing, but because she's from the heavenly planets, of course she can sing, you know, that's their idea. So then they sit and do this and that. So that's the interaction. And that in it, then you see is, you know, at some point it's going to be the aspect of where they, Radharani then being so absorbed in Krishna, then is talking to this Devi, and then, you know, that, you know, can you bring Krishna and all that, and, you know, because you're a demigoddess, can you bring Krishna? So then she says yes, and then she's so happy she embraces the demigoddess, and then you know, she notices that Krishna is there, because it was Krishna all along. So that Krishna is, it means on one sense the dative will be to be able to embrace Radharani, but actually the prayojana is the ecstatic mood that's exchanged between them during that. So that's where a mistake is made. Much of the time you see that sahajiyas always make it, and then also we were discussing some days back, is they think the situation or this or that is what's the goal. No, it's the prema, the exchange of the prema. That's the prayojana, that you're pleasing Krishna. And that pleasing means he's tasting the exchange of love between himself and the devotees, you know, on that pure unalloyed platform. That's prayojana. Not a particular thing gay. There's other things because it supports, you can say it's within that. Within prayojana, there'll be the activity, there'll be the situation. But the prayojana is actually the experience. So, because Krishna is everything. He is all action. He is all Shakti. So, you know, that's already there. So for him, that's just a situation. So it's the exchange that makes it dynamic. You know what I'm saying? So that comes up. That means that kind of thing would be what I'm talking about. That's what we would study.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we wouldn't be studying the technicality of dative and this and that. We would be discussing how they apply to each other, how they apply within in the pastimes, the way you're doing there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because then it makes sense. So when he says it's the data, then you understand that that's what it's talking about. It means you've attained a situation, but it's not necessarily the ultimate goal. It is the situation in which the ultimate goal may be appreciated. In other words, I have a situation now which wouldn't be, but if I adjust that, it'll be just like you go and some friends are coming over. So you go into the living room, it's a mess. So then you go and try to clean it up so it's clean. So the dative is your work was to get a clean room. See, but that's not it. Now it's not that. Now you can go into your room, close the door, and take a nap. You know, but it's so that when your guests come in, that it's a nice environment and everybody's very comfortable. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that thing is not fully understood. You know. And then where does it come from? Oh, it came from here, it came from there. No, it comes from Krishna's desire. Or the desire of the devotee to please a desire of Krishna. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then that has to take place in a particular location. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that, now you've discussed all the primary nouns and the verb. So everything centers around the verb.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what holds everything together. Otherwise, you have so many things, but until there's the verb, then that's where the focus comes. So language is actually that simple. Right? And that's the main, the primary. The secondary, then you have 18 other, you know, details. You know, there's four groups of six. So the primary nouns, the secondary nouns, and then another two sets of six were what, you know, how these things are played around with, which is not so important for us. If we understand the first six and the second six, then we're good. You know, second six is things like possessive, or how you say, where you, vocative, I think, where you say, you know, oh Krishna, the oh, that's the vocative aspect, you know, like that. So,
yeah.
So that kind of thing, then it can make sense. So if that's appreciated by the person who's translating, then they'll see that comes out. Rather than just get into the technical, you know, this is how it works in Russian, but, you know, as it is, it's already translated in English, so it's not necessarily that it's representing what's there in Sanskrit.
Yeah.
So if these things come across like that, that primary aspect, then it doesn't matter what languages it goes in, it still works. He says, Sita Krishna Kesha, bound up black hair. The Bhagavatam verse refers to the Lord's beauty, not his aging process, since he never changes. Taking two hairs does not mean that the hairs incarnated as Krishna and Balaram, that indicate that his own hairs are capable of relieving the earth of her burden, and also indicate the complexion of Krishna and Balaram. For to say that Vishnu's hair became Krishna and Balaram would be contrary to the statement Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. So then the whole idea is that when you see Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, then you see all these words and all these points that are made in that context. Then you get, that's why we follow the Acharyas. Because their realization of Krishna is such that they can see everything in that context because of that affection they have. So then they can come up with this statement, because that's the things you see here. Same Sanskrit. Vishnu took two hairs, one white, one black. These two hairs entered the wombs of Rohini and Devaki in the Yadav family. White hair became Balaram, the black hair became Krishna. Krishna was skillful bound up hair, whose method of attainment is unknown to men. Having made his appearance to relieve the earth of the suffering caused by the armies of demons, and to relieve the devotees of the pain of separation, will perform activities whose sweetness will hide his powers. So that's why we follow the acharyas. So anybody thinks that, no, but this acharya says this, and that's why Lord Chaitanya made that with so strong comments to Vallabhabhatta. It's like, you know, you saying, what would you know? You're, you know, a living entity is in the material world, is conditioned, and then by the reformatory process, he elevates himself. But how do you know what transcendence is unless it descends down to you? Because you can put things together in so many ways. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let us say, you have a jigsaw puzzle. Right? You know, you have all those little things that are cut out in all those funny ways.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you put them all together. So you always have that part that goes in and the part that's out so they can link together. But generally that shape is the same.
Yeah.
The curved part in and out is the same no matter where it is. It's just whether it's a long one or a short one or this or that or there's a corner, you know, where it maps. So technically you could take any one with the one that goes in and any one with the one that goes out and put them together and hit it and they'll stick together. You know? Problem is, it's whether the rest of it will match, that's another thing, but at least those two. So if that's your goal, then you can say, no, but I translated it and I see all the contradictions that he's dealing with, and then let's say, oh, this is contradictory, but no, it's all Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, it's not contradictory. Because he's looking at the grammar, because he's a scholar. So for a scholar, then that's the most important thing. Like, probably you could say, as I was saying, with an engineer, one of the moments of, not so much dissatisfaction, but disappointment. Or you've started the building, you've dug out the earth, you've made all the huge trenches, they lay it out, they start this big elaborate foundation that comes up, it's got so many layers and levels, and it all connects together in some very fancy way and all that, and it comes up to what would be the base of the walls, you know, just that what we see and everything like that. And up to that point, he's in ecstasy. Then the next moment will be his moment of disappointment, when they bring the dirt and fill it up, and all you see is these walls coming out of the ground. There'll be that moment of, nobody gets to see this. You know, that they're missing out on something. Their life is incomplete because they didn't see this. But the point is no, they can live in the house. That's what it's for. You know. So that's the thing, is the grammarian has to look at the grammatical things. And they'll always want to, you know, there's regular ways it works and there's very far out technical ways. And so for them, because that's what they have, the technical ways are going to be more tasty. So they're always going to want to apply that. And they have some new meanings that they've learned to the word, they're going to want to apply that. But that's their attachment. Well, here it's just a matter of what matches what Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam says. Then you're going to translate. So it might be very simple. It might be very elaborate. It might be half and half. It might be something that you would use simple is very elaborate. Something you'd use elaborate, simple. So that's why we follow the acharyas. So as we said, Sridhar Swami gave the commentary. Everybody else follows that. And if you're not following that, then you're not actually in line, properly in line. So that's how it goes. So therefore, when others make translations that don't go in line with these things, and they try to make it look as if it's more scholarly or something like that, it's not an improvement. It's not a value. Like Lord Chaitanya said, it's useless. It's useless. Might be nice grammar, nice things. Those that are more grammatical might appreciate it, but it doesn't mean it'll bring them any closer to Krishna. And if it's not doing that, that's where you define useful and useless. Does it bring you closer to Krishna? Because you can say, oh, now they understand what the Sanskrit's meaning. But no, they don't, because the Sanskrit's meaning this closeness to Krishna. They just, oh, so this is that part, this is this participle, this is this, and all these things. Oh, that's what it is. They don't know. So, yeah. The meaning could also be as follows. Why do you want me to appear, O Devatas, since I live on Swetadweep, on the Milk Ocean, as the Purusha form named Aniruddha? The forms Vasudeva and Sankarsana will personally appear in this world. They are worthy of placing on my head in respect like two hairs. They will easily remove the burden of the earth. Right? So that's that. You can take it from there that Aniruddha is making this statement. And then, you know.
It means Kiradaksha.
Yeah, he's making this statement. This is, he says, this is another meaning, how you can put it. But you see, all of them, even though they're taking different angles, all mean the same thing. Because that's the thing, is what do they mean? They mean that Vasudeva Shankar, I mean Krishna and Balaram, they're the ones that are respectable. They do things in their own way. You know, they're the independent lords. They're saying, why are you asking me to appear? Because they've come to the Milk Ocean to ask Kiradakshaya Vishnu to do something. He's saying, why are you asking me? You know, the original Vasudeva and Sankarsana are going to come. You know, so we can say, no, they're so many, so different. But they're not. They're saying the same thing. Even you take these different perspectives, they're not saying something different. So, yeah. The phrase Ujjaharat Manaha Keshav is explained in Mukta Phala commentary in this way. The Purusha manifested from himself the two happy Ka lords, Ishav, who are white and black. That Ka Ishav becomes Keshav. The two happy Ka lords, Ishav, who are black and white, rather than two hairs, Keshav. Keshav, that's the easy. Well, it's just automatic. That's what's going on there. But if you do that, why would it? It's like a, was it Ramanuja's guru? You know, Vishnu has eyes that are red like the backside of a monkey. It's just the easy, obvious. But since it's, but is that poetic? Is that how you tell your wife that, you know, that her cheeks, you know, the red, or you know, are beautiful like the backside of a monkey? You know, there's a good chance that she wouldn't even rap. She would just turn around and walk off. You know, close the door. And it's kind of like, what happened? I said something, it was nice. It is red, it is the same red. You know? So that's the thing, is that they'll say, no, but it is the translation. No, it's not. Like that. So that's the problem. That's why scholarship cannot bring you bhakti. Bhakti, then, one becomes a scholar. One becomes a poet. But scholars, the scholarship itself cannot make one a devotee. You can be engaged. In other words, it's a secondary thing. You can be engaged in the devotional process, but itself is not the devotional process. So that's why they're said. And that's the fun part, is they're using all this scholarship, but you see, they're not using it as scholars. They're using it to explain, you know, the Lord and the devotees and the devotion, their natural exchange between them. So they're explaining the grammar, but it's not that the grammar is making the point. The grammar is, like we saw before, is that even when the demons are making these comments about the Lord, like Shishupal, then Saraswati takes the opportunity to offer her prayers to Krishna. So there, in their mind, they're saying all these insults, but at the same time, as if you understand, you can see it in that context, that it's in glorification of Krishna. Does that make sense? So, since Krishna is the absolute truth, that would be the actual thing. Because we're looking at it, no, it's the fact. But how is it the fact? You know, why do you say that is the fact? That's because of your own subjective view. You know, that's the whole point. So since it all comes down to, it has that relative and that subjective aspect, how does it all hold together? It only holds together because of the absolute truth. So, in other words, how he's expanding it, how he descends, how what he says it's for, that becomes then the actual understanding. And that's always consistent. But because he's unlimited, therefore the facets of it become so fine and so subtle. And these things, it's only through revelation. It's not that, oh, I should study grammar, therefore I'm going to understand it. No, I've seen so many people study grammar and they don't understand anything. It's like I said, I think one person really got into all these technical points of the Vedic, like that. And, you know, all the Muhurta, everything like this. And he had decided he's leaving Mayapur, going back to the West, and getting into... you know, going to go back to university, get his PhD, and, you know, study like that, because he really was attracted to, you know, scholarship. And but because he wouldn't use that necessarily in connection with Krishna, he wouldn't follow the sadhana, he wouldn't do it, because that became the most important. So he'd study 10, 12 hours a day. He even had a table made, when you're too tired to sit up, it was a table that had a glass top, that he could put it over his head and put the book, you know, so it's close enough that he could take the book and turn the page and then just sit there and look at it, read, and then turn the page again. You know, he was that into it. So 10, 12 hours a day was no, and he was very consistent every day, day in, day out. So from all this, then he had decided that the conclusion of all this scholarship is he should now go, because what devotees will know and appreciate what he knows. So he'll go to the West, where, you know, in his university, and well, they'll appreciate and all that. And he is a PhD in one of those universities. So then they'll appreciate, and he'll have a status and all that. Otherwise, here it's like, you know, why aren't you going to Mangalarti? Why aren't you doing this? Why don't you clean the place? Why don't you, you know, like that? Why don't you change your rounds? You know, it's like they always harass. I'm a scholar, you know, while in the West, without any of this, they'll all think I'm fabulous. And so then, one, his conclusion there was wrong, because it was all about, you know, being recognized. And two, from his muhurta, he found the exact best time to leave would be on Gaurapurnima day. And they found the perfect muhurta then, that's when he should leave for his new quest. So he leaves Mayapur on Gaurapurnima for a mundane purpose. And this all came from scholarship. And I say, as far as detail of things, I haven't met anyone that knows as much as him. Of all the scholars that we have now, I've never said, like, that detail. Like, you come to him and go, I'm looking for, you know, this book. And then he'll stand at the door. He won't let you in. You know, all the books are here, but it's like, they're his books. You know, he's read them all. You ask him. Okay, so what book? Rig Veda. Okay, but which section? Oh, it's in the Brahmana. Which Brahmana? Then you say, you know, Satipata Brahmana. It says, okay, now we have some. What's the topic? You know, what is it you want to know? Why do you want to read that? Because I don't have this question. And then he'll just tell you the answer and then close the door. You know, it's just like, your work's done. Go. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like, what was his name? It was Vishwamitra. He had that kind of detailed knowledge. You know, he was considered, no one could keep up with that. But then I think it's mentioned that Gargi, then, you know, she was a, you know, a Mahabhagavat. But then no one had any, so the king, Janaka, asked, does anybody else have any questions for the great sage and all that? And then she started asking questions on transcendental subject matter. He knew nothing. To the point he thought she's mocking. You know, she's it's like me asking, you know, you about something. I make up words and things like that of that. That, you know, it's just like, what are you talking about? I know everything. What is this? And so he asks, fuck you, and she can see he's getting flustered and angry. And so, being Vaishnava, then she stood up and said, no one's a greater scholar than Vishwamitra. You know, he should be acknowledged in the court. But Janaka Raj, because he's a Mahajan, he understood that actually Gargi was the greatest. But he understood what she was doing. Because otherwise, he doesn't know. No one else knows. So therefore, on their platform of mundane scholarship, he's the greatest. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the difficulty with scholarship, is that you can be completely blindsided. You don't know. The scholarship itself becomes so important, you don't know. You know, it's just like, remember as a kid, where I'd go down to the gasoline pump, where I'd fill the tires for my bicycle. Connected with it, there was a Harley Davidson motorcycle shop. And guys are always in there tinkering with their motorcycles. And so, you know, and in my mind is that you have a Harley, you always tinker with it. You're always fixing something and doing something, you know, because you're an enthusiast, so you're trying to make it better, you know, and everything like that. You know, maybe you're putting mods on, whatever it is. Then, just very recently, I saw something where it was talking about the unreliability of Harley Davidsons. That you constantly have to work with them. You take it for a good ride, you have to come back and adjust things. Well, if you just want a bike that works and rides, get yourself a Japanese bike, because you can ride it eternally until it just falls apart. But other than that, you don't have to do anything. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, what? What do you mean? It's Harley. It's the best. You know? And then, no, they're tinkering. They like tinkering. So in their mind, it's not because without tinkering it won't work. It's that they like to tinker with it. They like to play with it. Therefore, you know, it's the best. Because these others, what do? You just get on and off and that's it. That's all you do. You know, how are you a bikey if you don't play with your motor, you know, adjust something. So the same way with the grammarians. As soon as you say it doesn't, well, what do you mean? No, grammar is everything. I can do everything with grammar. You know, just like the astrologers. I know everything. I can tell what everybody's going to do. And all. No, they can't. But in their mind, they really sincerely think they can. You know, the engineer thinks without him, the building is not that. But even if it's a perfect engineering building, then it's not. Like Eiffel Tower, it engineeringly is good, but for some people, it's not very aesthetic. It's just a bunch of iron stuck together, you know. We're always, you know, said, you know, it's very beautiful and all. But it's not. It's just engineeringly very nice. And so it's the niceness of the engineering, but if you want something more, then no. You know, Notre Dame, now that's a bit better. You know, that's good. So you're saying it's just, it has that element that is like a garbage truck. It only has everything on it that works. So technically, it's very good. So it is a kind of aesthetic where it's all there, but it's just that. But you see, what Krishna does is, he means here, grammatically it's right, but it's the poetics that give it the real thing. So that's just the structure. The engineering is just the structure, and then what you put on that, what you do with it, how you use it, that's the real point. So that's why any of these branches of knowledge, you know, if you're expert in that, that does not qualify you for bhakti. It's when you want to use that in connection with bhakti, or you want to know Krishna, and then, since you have that ability, you can use that for Krishna. Then it becomes very nice. Then it becomes perfect. But it on its own will not give you Krishna. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's why someone said, no, but all these meanings, it could be means this, that. No, it means this. The principle is that Krishna and Balaram are the independent lords and they come down on their own will. And without them revealing themselves, you cannot know them because they're beyond everything. That's the principle. Then, finer details, how the pastime is unfolding, that these things are mentioned, then that then gives the variety. That's the visation. But when it says Krishna is one, it means it's one, but there's visation. So Gramic will look at the visation and not see the one. You know, the impersonalist will just look at the one, not look at the visation. So that's why grammarians and impersonalists go together very well. said.
Yeah.
In Parivamsa, it is also recounted that he cast off his Vishnu form in a mountain cave, and leaving Garuda there, he personally came to this world as Krishna, and thus his hair did not become Krishna. This is recounted, I guess, in the section starting with Sa Devan Abhyanu Gyaya, Parivamsa 155-50. Those who have explained the verses to mean that Krishna is the hair of Vishnu have not considered the matter thoroughly, since it is well known that even devatas do not grow old and get white hair. It is impossible for Vishnu, who is beyond time, to get white hair because of old age. So then how are you going to get it? And there is no scriptural proof that the Lord has natural white and black hair. Thus, in Nisringa Purana 53:30-31, the word Shakti is used instead of Kesha, hair. So then they're just taking, two hairs on that, but where did that white hair come from? He's not going to pull out the Srivatsa. That we know is a white hair, but anywhere else it is? You know, and they're talking about on his head. So where's that going to, where's the white hair? Where do we ever hear a description of Krishna having white hair on his head? You know what I'm saying? So that's what he's saying. They haven't really thought about this very well. It just looks, it comes very easy for them. And, this is this, and whoosh, goes through and hard ball. You know, like that. Vasudevascha devakyam avatirya yadho kule sita krishne chamak chamach chakti kamsadya ghatayish yataha. The white and black forms, my Shaktis, appearing from Vasudeva and Devaki's womb in the Yadu dynasty, will kill Kamsa and other demons. Therefore, let the word Kesha, and here's another, is this him speaking? No, this is something else. This is in quotes, does that mean that it's a doubt?
Yeah.
Shamshaya. I would say is when you have these things like that, maybe before it, put in a little brackets. You can put square brackets, but Shamshaya. Just so we always know, because sometimes it's you can't quite tell. Therefore, let the world, you know, it means you start reading it, and when you get to the end, it goes, that's weird, and then you look, and then you figure out. Therefore, let the word Kesha stand for Amsha. Krishna is an Amsha, Vishnu. End quote. That is not so, since it is also ascertained that Krishna is full of inexhaustible Shaktis and is the origin of the Purusha forms. Furthermore, the names Krishna and Vishnu are often used interchangeably. No avatar and no other person has a famous birthday called Jayanti. Thus it is said in Mahabharata 1.1.193, Bhagavan Vasudevascha Kirtyate Tra Sanatana. It goes with that one. Shashvatam Brahma Paramam Yogi Jayam Niranjanam. Eternal Bhagavan Vasudeva is glorified in this book. He is the pure, eternal, supreme Brahman, the object of yogi's meditation. He is beyond time, Devaki says. O inaugurator of the material energy, time which starts with seconds. Just thinking, the second, or and ends with years, or starts with seconds and ends with years. Yeah, do that. That's easier. Which rotate to make the lifetime of Brahma, and by which the universe moves, is said to be your movement. I surrender to the Supreme Lord, the abode of fearlessness and happiness. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.3.26. The residents of Dwarka say, O Master, we continually offer respects to your lotus feet, the supreme shelter for those desiring the highest benefit, which are worshipped by Brahma, the Kumaras, and Indra, and which cannot be influenced by time, though time controls even Brahma. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.11.6. Subhasha Kanda, speaking of Vishnu, states that his black hair is a sign of youth and his white hair is a sign of aging. This cannot mean that Vishnu ages, since even devatas do not age. The statement occurs in a section dealing with dry renunciation for people with material bodies who should understand that the body is temporary. Exaggerated statements are sometimes found in scriptures. Garuda says, I offer my respects to karma by which Vishnu was made to accept the 10 incarnations. As if forced to a dark cave, assuming animal forms, and Shiva is made to beg everywhere. Garuda Puran 1.113.15. Who can express the evil nature of gold, also called Datura? Because of having the same name, even Datura Alba, a poisonous plant, induces madness. But this is a false statement for emphasizing the power of karma, using words to indicate that the avatars like Matsya are equivalent to material fish, etc. Right, so it's just trying to emphasize the point of karma. You know, so even Krishna comes and performs his pastimes, and it appears a work has to be done, so he takes that form to do it. But it's his independence that he decides to do that. While the living entity is forced, that's karma. A statement found in a scripture dedicated to Shiva is not accepted if it contradicts Vaishnava conclusions. I would say instead of a statement found in scripture dedicated to Shiva, because it's not about a statement in, or it can be both, it can be both. A statement found in, because it's dedicated to Shiva, in a scripture dedicated to Shiva, it contradicts conclusions, Vaishnava conclusions. In Skanda Purana is said by Shiva to Kartikeya, Shiva Shastrepi Yad Grahyam Bhagavach Shastra Yogi Yat. Portions of Shiva scriptures. Oh no, here this is about Shiva scriptures. Portions of Shiva scriptures, which are in agreement with scriptures concerning Bhagavan, are accepted. This is reasonable sense, because those scriptures give different conclusions. They are unauthoritative by nature. Yeah, this is Shiva to Kartikeya, so Shiva is saying this. Yata pankena pankam bhas suraya va sura kritam. One cannot purify muddy water by using mud, or cannot purify what is contaminated with liquor by applying more liquor. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.52. Right, because if you're dealing with a material conclusion by giving another one, it won't correct it. In Padma Purana, Uttarakhanda is shown that Puranas which promote Shiva are classed as tamasic. Matsya Purana also confirms their tamasic nature. Ramaharshana thus offended Balaram because he did not study Bhagavatam, which presents the final conclusions, and thus spoke words arising from lack of complete knowledge of the nature of Bhagavan. So Ramaharshana had learned all the Puranas, but he hadn't learned Bhagavatam. And so because of that, then there would be a weakness in his actual understanding of the position of Lord Balaram. You know, what is the nature of Bhagavan? So he was thinking that, you know, Bhagavan follows all these rules, I'm sitting in the Vasi, so therefore I don't have to rise. But it was all about himself, it wasn't about Bhagavan. So he hasn't learned that it's surrender to the Lord. He's thinking, no, it's following in the scriptures. So he could speak all the Puranas nicely because he knew them and everything. And whatever questions were asked, but when it comes to Bhagavatam, then you see he's not the one speaking them. Then it's his son, Ugrashava, he's speaking, because then he's heard from the proper source. Bhagavatam also says in the story of Shalva, Evam varanti rajarshe rishaya kechana vita. Yat sva vacho virudyeta nunam te na smarantyuta. Such is the account given by some sages. O wise king, but those who speak in this illogical way are contradicting themselves. having forgotten their own previous statements, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.77.30. Such a statement in the Bhagavatam negates the contrary statements found in other Puranas. This is like the statement, Iha karma jito loka kshiyate. The places attained by pious acts are temporary. Chandogya Upanishad 8.16. It negates the statement, Upama somam amrita abhuma. We became immortal by drinking soma. Rig Veda 8.48.3. Use of reasoning is seen in Bhagavatam when it says they contradict themselves, having forgotten their own previous statements. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.77.30. Sutta indicates his own perplexity by saying, Achintya kalao ye bhava na tams tarakena yojayet. Topics which are inconceivable are not subject to logic. Brahmanda Purana 1.15.7. So anything that's beyond, it's not subject to logic. It's not that you can't explain it logically, but it's not that by logic you'll understand it. So you explain it in a logical way, it's given by the acharyas, that has to be accepted like that. You can't say, no, but logically in here, there's this logical problem here, so you can do it this and come up with this answer. No, because it's inconceivable. You can't understand it by logic. So that you're being given what is the position of the thing, and it's being explained in a logical way that just makes it all the more, accessible. But otherwise, it's that it can't be what is inconceivable. By the nature, inconceivable means logic can't explain it. Right? And if you want to say that by saying that it's not illogical to say that the supreme absolute truth is inconceivable. People can't say that's illogical. And so because of that, logic can be used. You know, it's beyond. You can't. Yeah. In the Uttara portion of the same scripture, in the story of how the moon received spots, related to the appearance of Krishna, the words Swayam Vishnur Eva, he is Vishnu himself, are found. This is contrary to the opponent's arguments. Therefore, the word Keshavatara indicates a youth. Or the whole section is spoken for people who do not know the nature of Bhagavan, for cheating them. So they either can be, cheat them, because then they'll classify like that pastime with the Mosha Lila. It's just to cheat those who want to be cheated. Those materialists who don't want to know the absolute truth, then by that Mosha Lila we could say, see, he's also. They don't understand how it's being done. So it can be used to cheat others. They get cheated in that way. Or it's pointing out that the Keshavatara means it's that it has to be Vishnu, because he's a youth, because black hair. Where does the white hair come from? Because he doesn't get old. We should see the meaning of the word from Vaishnava verse. Amshavo ye prakashante mamate kesha sam gita saravagya keshavam tasman mam ahur muni satama. The rays which manifest from me are called kesha. The wise call me Keshava for this reason. O best of sages, Mahabharata 12:328-43. Yeah, so here kesha means the rays that come from him are kesha. And then they're going to say that he's a hare. According to this verse from the Vishnu Sahasranama Stotra, kesha means ray. Since other words like rays or effulgence are used instead of kesha in other scriptures, and it is well known from Moksha Dharma that Narada saw many colored rays of the Lord, the meaning of kesha should be ray. In the Vishnu Purana verse, the two rays, kesha, are understood to be Vasudeva and Sankarsana. It is accepted that these two forms manifest from Aniruddha, dwelling in the milk ocean, since the avatars are included within the effulgence rays of the avatari, Krishna. So in his rays, then they're all included. So then Krishna and Balaram appear. So but it's also that the rays of Krishna, the amsas, the Sankarshan and Vasudeva, then they also appear in Krishna. Because when he appears, all the avatars are there, since just his effulgence includes all the avatars. You know, so the effulgence have nothing. They, you know, not all their the basis of existence, all the qualities are there, all the avatar, everything is there in that. It's just a matter of whether it's we're able to appreciate it or not, whether it's manifest or not. The form described in the first canto is the Purusha called Aniruddha. So here you see is that even that they're manifesting from Aniruddha doesn't contradict, since it said also that all they all come with Krishna, all the avatars. And if you're using particular ray comes from Krishna. So if Krishna comes, and the rays come with him. Does that make sense? Yeah. The form described in the first canto is the Purusha called Aniruddha. The one supreme Purusha, accepting the gunas of Prakriti, known as Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, for creation, maintenance, and destruction, is called Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva. The best results for the devotees will come from Vishnu, with Shuddha Sattva body, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.23. According to the fifth canto, Sankarsana is described as the object of Shiva's worship. The Ilavrita Varsha, in Ilavrita Varsha, Lord Shiva is always encircled by 10 billion maidservants of Goddess Durga. Uttering the following mantra in meditation, Shiva worships Sankarsana, his source, the spiritual form in charge of ignorance, among the four forms of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.17.16. Therefore, the meaning of taking two hairs in Vishnu Purana is thus: from himself, Atmanaha, he manifested Ujjara, two rays, Kesha, which are amsas of Vasudeva and Sankarsana. The example is given of Sumeru. By seeing part of the mountain, one can define the whole Meru. Similarly, by seeing this his light, one can understand the complete manifestation of the Lord. It's also interesting is that whatever just his Jiva Goswami scholarship is so great that whatever level he's explaining it, he can bring it in line. Then he gives more detail and then explains it at that a deeper level. And it gives more and then he can just keep going. You know, even on the hair part, he can explain it according to that, how it's not this, it's that. Then he can go back and show how it, you know, what it would be. And then, so from any of the angles, he's able to. But you see, in all of them, it always comes back to that Krishna is two Bhagavan Swayam. So this is the meaning of the regulatory verse. It has to be seen in line with that. And if it doesn't, if they say, oh, it contradicts that verse, then that's the point. You have to work out how it doesn't contradict. Right? It means if we're looking for an excuse, yes, then we can find contradictions. So then we can, because if there's contradiction, then we're confused. If we're confused, that you know, there's doubt. There's doubt means there's no determination or focus or will to do something. So that means we don't have to do anything. So if I have a doubt, then you know what to do: go home and make breakfast, and you know, read the newspaper or something. You know. So,
well, I just order breakfast and read the internet.
Okay. Yes.
In the modern context.
Yes, in the more up-to-date context. Yeah. Yeah, but you have to excuse us that our reference comes in just after the meteor hit, you know, and the dinosaurs kind of faded out from there, kind of this way. Yeah. The sentence, Sachapi Keshav Harir Ud Bhabhara Shuklam Ekam Aparam Chapi Krishnam, Mahabharata 1:189-31-32, should be explained. Drawing them out from himself by the power of yoga, Udva Vahara. He showed two rays, one white and one black. The word cha indicates previous reference. The Lord was requested by the devatas. The word api, even, indicates that Vishnu is an amsa of the two. Bhagavan and Sankarsana. Tao Chap, so they've been requested by the demigods, so then these two appear, but they're actually the original Lord. Right? Tam Chapi Keshav Vishatam Yadunam Kule Striyav Rohinim Devakim Cha. The word cha indicating an unspoken whole. In Tao Chapi indicates that the two, Bhagavan and Sankarsana, personally entered the wombs of Rohini and Devaki, and later Krishna and Balaram entered by becoming one with the first two forms. The word api means where he is joined with his amshas. This means that these two were also Krishna's amshas. Thus it is next said in the passage of the two when one became Balabhadra. This is in the manner of the statement Naro Narayano Bhavet Harir Eka Bhaven Naraha. Nara becomes Narayan, and the Lord becomes Nara. This statement is made instead of this statement is made instead of, since the two, Nara, Jiva, and Narayana, are considered one. Keshava is famous as the deity at the Mahayoga Pit in Mathura, called Keshavastana. That form is Krishna. This is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.26. With the words, Kalaya Sita Krishna Keshaha. Krishna has skillfully bound up hair. The Shinga Purana says, Sita Sita Cha Mat Chakti. My two Shaktis are white and black. This indicates that the white and black rays are equated with his Shakti. This usage is not seen in Bhagavatam, however. Agama also says that Nara expands as Arjuna, and Krishna as Narayan himself. Arjuna enters into Nara. The former statement should be understood to be like the section of Bhagavatam stating, this is an account given by other sages. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.77.30. Sometimes the Lord shows himself in a different way to hide himself, and thus the sages praise him according to their perception. Because sometimes you see, some say this, some say that. So even the acharyas were in giving their purports. In Kalaya Sita Krishna Keshaha, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.26, the word Kalaya should agree with the meaning of Bhagavatam. Thus the meaning should be, he who has white and black expansions or has bound hair, who is directly Bhagavan, appeared with his amshas. The passage in Harivamsa, describing Krishna's appearance from the Purusha, Narayana, by casting off his form in a cave, indicates that when Krishna appears, he attracts all of Narayana's power in himself. All forms enter into Krishna when he appears in this world. That is illustrated in this story. So, in other words, we're thinking, he said, Vishnu's casting off and then becoming Krishna. His meaning is that everything is absorbed in Krishna, so you don't have to have a separate manifestation. It's already contained within Krishna. Though Padma Purana says that Nrisimha, Rama, and Krishna have the six qualities of Bhagavan in full, it does not mean that they are equal. It indicates that among all avatars, they are the best. Generally, these three are considered the best of all. Among them, however, according to the order, they are successively superior. Thus, Krishna is supreme. Udriti. Srila Rupa Goswami elaborates on this subject in Laghu Bhagavatamrita as follows. The six qualities are fully manifested in Nrisimha, Rama, and Krishna. They are thus considered Paravasta. The relation between the other two, Nrisimha and Rama, and Krishna is like lamps lit from the lamp of full six powers manifest in Krishna. Padma Purana, Uttara, 226.42. It has been explained that it is contradictory to say that Krishna is an amsha of Narayana or Vamana, since he is Paravasta. Paravasta is now described. This means that Krishna has all six qualities of the Lord in full. Among the three successively, Nrisimha, then Rama, and finally Krishna manifest more powers. The example is given to conceive of their relationship and powers. Laghu Bhagavatamrita, chapter 5, text 16, and commentary. My, We'll stop here because it gets into another technical.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki jai.